Folks, this is Jack Spirko with another edition of the Survival Podcast. As always, one man's view of the changing world, the changing times, and the things we can all do to live a better life. Times get tough, or even if they don't. Today is Thursday, the 23rd of January, 2025, and this is episode 3615 of the show. It is an audio-only show for those that like the live streams, except I did do a live stream today just for my segment. I'll tell you about that when we get to it. What we have today, though, is Dan McAdams and Ron Paul on how to approach the second Trump administration. That was actually done that from one of their shows prior to the inauguration. So there's a whole lot of stuff that's happened since the inauguration that's not included in the opinions expressed there, but I think that's a good segment. Nick Ferguson will talk about feeding rabbits. Mike Melito will talk about choosing thermal vision or night gear. Joel Riles will talk about training dogs. Well, that's what he always talks about. No. Training stubborn dogs. Dogs that go, woo. You know what I'm talking about. You know who does that? The Husky. And other dogs with that mindset. Ryan Steva will talk about using AI without being tracked after you do it. Patrick Rohrman will talk about choosing knife handle material. Ben Falk, who we have not heard from in a long time, will talk about getting started with backyard maple syrup tapping on a small scale. And I am going to talk about what the deal is with AI-driven cancer vaccines. This is a big mess, and I have a lot of concerns. There's also a lot of people saying a lot of stupid shit about it, too. And the problem with people who you agree with their conclusion but not the means by which they reached it. Basically, this is dangerous and you better be careful. Of course, some of them are absolutists, and this is like Bill Gates trying to kill the world or something. But even when you completely agree with where they end, when they say stupid shit in the middle, you know what happens. We've been through this so many times over the years. So many times I've said that's what's going to happen, and then son of a bitch, it did. The people that are the most lunatic fringe, while everybody's being censored, somehow the lunatic fringe on the most extreme opposition side that say the dumbest shit, they get amplified. They get amplified. And, you know, it's like the black Nigerian doctor in the white lab coat doctors that came out to talk about using hydroxychloroquine for COVID. And then, you know, the crazy one was the one that got the 60 Minutes interview 24 hours later and destroyed the entire movement before it even started. Funny how that happens. And the way we can at least, we can't prevent it. There's so many things people are like, we're going to hold our feet to the fire. We're going to stop this. We're going to prevent. No, you're not. What we can do is mitigate things, at least for ourselves and for the people around us. And the best way to do that is to learn actual facts so that you can actually object to things with facts, logic, and reason. When you do that, you're still going to have a lot of people that cannot listen to facts, logic. They can't. If it conflicts with their political beliefs, their ideology, their hopes, their dreams, whatever it is, la, 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 they won't listen. However, as we discussed with Molly yesterday, sometimes it's one little crack and then that person has to go on their own journey. So if you're going to have conversations, you should always be seeking the crack, not the close. The close is they say, you know what, I never thought of it that way, you're right. It takes a very mature person who's in a state of denial to get to that state, you know, in 20 or 30 minutes of conversation. But if you have a 20-minute conversation with somebody and you use facts, logic, and reason, and you let it go, it often sticks in them. And then they start analyzing it. And then they're like, damn, I'm going to prove this guy wrong. And if you do it with facts, then they actually have something to research. Instead of researching why they're right, they research the claim you made. Is it true? And if you give them a claim that's easily verifiable, once they see that claim is true, they start going, well, what else? That's what my 25-minute rant you'll hear at the end of today is now. I didn't want it to be 25 minutes, but there's so much to cover in it. So much to cover in it. It had to be. So I'm going to tell you that I'm going to be very short in my in-between content between member segments today to keep the overall length of this episode typical to an EC show of an hour to an hour and 15 minutes. I think we'll go a little over that. Anyway, with that, let's go ahead and hear from Dr. Paul and Dan McAdams on how to approach the second Trump administration.
So what do you got for us, Chris?
Yeah, the next thing that I wanted to talk about was the new Trump administration. He's going to be inaugurated in 3 days. So just wanted to share some thoughts. Myself personally, I think it's going to be a mixed bag. There's going to be good things, I believe. I think we're going to be talking about some good, but there's also going to be not so good and perhaps horrible things. And we just have to keep our minds open and stick to, you know, principles and truth, because we live in a world that's rare. There's both sides of the Trump issue, where there are people, lots of them, people call them conservative ink, where Donald Trump, no matter what he says, it is glorious. It has never been better. This is true leadership. We are so back. No matter what he says, Trump can say, I'm bringing Obama into the administration. Oh, my goodness, this is the greatest thing ever. So you have to watch out for these people, and there's tons of them. And they have a lot of influence. But you also have to watch for the other people that they are complete doom. Donald Trump is one of them. The establishment, this is all a scam. There is nothing good. There is nothing good that Donald Trump can do. You have to watch for that side. Here on the Ron Paul Liberty Report, Ron Paul Institute, we don't play either of those sides. We take it issue by issue. He is not, you know, the Messiah, but he's also not a serpent. You know, we're going to take each issue and analyze it. And if it's good, we'll praise it. If it's terrible, we have to criticize it. We're not going to close our eyes and don't criticize it. Donald Trump is not an extension of this show, so we're not going to treat him like that. But we hope at the same time that there's a lot of good stuff that we can praise.
Well said, Chris. Absolutely. You know, and you're right. We're going to be angry. We're going to be ticked off. We're going to be disappointed. But there are going to be some things. I mean, I think the greatest strength that Trump may have for us is that he'll be a disruptor, you know, and that may be not what we want. I don't want a disruptor necessarily, but it's not a bad thing. We've had 4 years of being led by a comatose person. And actually the people really doing things are people like Blinken, who are very damaging. So I think a disruptor is good. But, you know, there are some good signs at first. And you're right, he's not going to be the Messiah. But you have and it's going to be interesting to honestly, Chris, to see him and the people he hired to advise him, because they're going to be at loggerheads. It's going to be very evident very soon, because, first of all, they're very big China hawks. And so is Trump to a degree as well. But here's China hawk Trump saying, hey, Xi, you want to come out and hang out at the inauguration? You know, he invited him to the inauguration while Waltz, his national security advisor, coming in, is talking about, we've got to take down those Chi-Coms, you know. And I was just reading this morning, Chris, that he actually made a phone call to Xi Jinping, and they had a talk. They talked about TikTok. They talked about tariffs. They talked about a few other things. Now, ultimately, it may not be successful, but for God's sake, he's picking up the phone and talking to these people. That's what we need to have happen. I think we can look forward to Trump talking to Putin in very short order as well. And when they start talking, you know, the old saying, Chris, jaw, jaw is better than war, war. So I think just the fact that he's willing to talk to these people is a good first indication.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. The idea that is often floated that when you talk to another world leader, if they happen to be a bad person, you somehow legitimize them, is one of the most dumb talking points that both the left and right engage in whenever the meeting doesn't suit their agenda. It's retarded. It really is. It's one of the most retarded things done. You should always have the leaders of major powers speaking directly to each other, because there's literally no way to know that you're getting the true story when somebody goes as an intermediary. Here's an old story that from my background that has nothing to do with politics. I worked for a company at one time that had to do some layoffs, and they laid off a girl who managed parts inventory. And I was a salesperson, and kind of parts inventory and cost is really important. So this other girl got her job. It was a step up for her, which I found to be not so great. But I had a conversation with her after like the fourth time I'm trying to, you know, put together a takeoff to do a bid, and there's no price associated with the product that's current, even though I had filed everything necessary to get that done, and there'd been plenty of time to do it. And so I said to her, I said, listen, I want to be clear. I am not saying there was anything that you did that in any way, and this is exactly how I phrased it, guys, in any way had anything to do with Debbie losing her job at all. But I am going to ask you this. When you were told you absorbed that responsibility, was it exciting? Did you think this is something you wanted to do? She said, yes. I said, then it needs to be done, and this is how this gets done. If you need help, let me know. I will help you. I'll get somebody to help you, but I have to have this information. And if I don't have this information, there's going to be more layoffs because I'm the one that sells everything. And she said, okay. 10 minutes later, I caught her in the back room telling somebody, and Jack specifically asked me if I had anything to do with Debbie getting fired because he thinks I did. That's not what I said. And I caught her, and I called her, and she said, but you can see where I'm coming from. I'm like, no, you tell me now that I'm standing here what you're coming from. Okay, now, that's piddly bullshit politics in an office. Okay, now you have a general feeding back-end information to the Chinese that we're not going to do what the president says, and then you have a diplomat telling the president something that the Chinese didn't say. You can see where this would be a problem. You always need open conversation. The reason that we didn't blow the world into a fireball in the 1960s is because JFK talked directly to the head of the Soviet Union. Without that, ba-boom! So I think it's a good thing when we talk to people as well. All right, with that, let's go to something totally different. Let's talk about feeding rabbits. And I'm going to say, Jack was sort of wrong here, but Nick's the reason I was wrong. Let Nick fix his own thing. It'll make sense in a second. But basically, people are asking about feeding rabbits using a bag mower, which I've said many times that can have some risks. So Nick, explain that.
Hey there, Nick Ferguson here with an expert counsel answer for James on feeding rabbits. But first, I want to remind you guys to check out the plant sale over at rareplantstore.com. We're down to single digits on most things, and we have a lot of really cool offerings this year. We haven't even kept pace with inflation on our pricing, so get them while you can. This question comes from James, and he says, this question is for Nick Ferguson. Can rabbits safely be fed grass from a bagging mower? I've heard it mentioned that rabbits could be raised for free if you have access to a lawn and a bagging mower. When I look this up online, I read that feeding rabbits from a mower is not recommended because the grass will quickly ferment and could potentially kill rabbits due to the gas buildup in their digestive tract. Is there validity to the statement that mowed grass is unsafe for rabbits? Is there a safe way to feed grass to meat rabbits who are in a cage system rather than a tractor? Yes, you can feed it to them. Not recommend because the grass will... It will quickly ferment, and it can kill your rabbits. Exactly what you said. So, yes, there's validity to the statement. But, yes, there's a safe way to do it. I disagree very strongly with the statement that you can raise them for free because... It's just most grasses are going to be so low in protein, it's not going to be ideal. So I would lean very, very strongly towards tree hay if you're going to do anything like that and try to be sustainable with raising rabbits. I would look at grasses from a lawn as a supplementary thing. You certainly can do it. I've done it before with no issues. However, like I said, there is truth to the fact that the grass will start to ferment and mold fairly quickly. The mold is actually, in my mind, more of a problem. So don't just throw a cubic foot of compacted, freshly cut grass in there. Much better to tractor the rabbits and let them harvest the grass fresh. But if that's your only option, much better to take the bag clippings and lay them out to dry on a tarp in the shade and then use that as hay. The problem, this is the problem with doing this and using the grass from a bagged mower. The problem is most mowers that people have and operate, they don't sharpen the blades. So instead of slicing the hay, it's just like smashed and beaten and bruised into pieces, especially with mulching blades. Mulching blades are designed to bash it up into lots of tiny pieces so that your grass kind of disappears into the turf. The product you get from a mulcher blade that's dull is never going to be as good as traditionally cut hay. It's bruised. It's just subpar. It's better than nothing, but it would be better to use a non-mulching blade, and good luck finding those anymore, and keep it sharp. You can feed a little bit fresh, but nothing more than a small handful at a time, because like I said, it is completely bruised, and it's going to be very dense, and it's going to be molding and breaking down pretty quickly, and wilting. A couple things to consider and to be careful of. If you're taking these from a lawn that does not belong to you, there are issues with pesticides and fertilizers. Most fungicides are highly, highly toxic, and a lot of the herbicides and insecticides are also pretty toxic as well. If you run a lawnmower over granulated pesticides or fertilizers, there are a lot of fertilizers that are imbued with pesticides. They're like mixed together, and so it's two-in-one product. You're likely to pick up a lot of it in the bag and concentrate it to toxic levels. So if you don't know about it, and you were to handle or feed it to the animals, that is no bueno. So, as long as you know that there are no issues, I would relegate lawn clippings to being mostly subpar dried hay and a small portion of it being fresh feed. Again, not to beat a dead horse, while it's fine to feed this stuff, it is beaten to crap by dull mulching blades. The bruised leaves will wilt very fast. I mean, I'm talking within minutes, 10, 15 minutes, and they're already wilty. So if you're mowing for half an hour and then you pull this stuff out, half of that stuff in there is going to be already wilted. And that's just not great for the animals, any animals. It's going to start to succumb to fungal decomposition pretty quickly when it's wilted, and that is not a recipe for a healthy rabbit gut, really any gut. So be careful and sparing. It's much better to tractor them or use a sickle bar mower or a hedge trimmer to harvest the grass and then just rake it up. Thanks for the questions and keep them coming, and don't forget to shoot me an email if you're interested in getting on the March consulting tour. To send me an email to nick@homegrownliberty.com with consulting in the subject line. I'm Nick Ferguson with Homegrown Liberty and Rare Plant Store. Do good things.
So I am going to say that I have repeatedly mentioned using a bag mower to make hay for rabbits, but I'm also going to say that my source of that claim was quite a few years ago, Nick Ferguson saying it off the cuff, which maybe he didn't intend to, maybe he hadn't gone down this road yet, maybe he intended it to be understood, to be done with a sharp blade, non-mulching, laid out on top, I don't know. But I would say you can definitely make hay for rabbits from a yard. But based on what I just heard, I would think what you want then is a really sharp scythe and a yard that is a mix, which would always be what you'd want for something like this, of grasses and forbs. So you have clovers, you have plantains, and things, and, you know, things like that in your lawn. But, okay, that makes sense, what Nick just said, and I won't say it that way anymore. Thanks, Nick. All right, moving on, let's talk about choosing thermal or night vision gear with Mike Melito.
Hey, TSP. Michael Melito here to answer a question from you guys on night vision and thermals. David asked the bottom line up front, which is nice and succinct, which thermal and which night vision clip-ons do you recommend? Gets into a little bit more detail. I'm interested in a mid-price point for both thermal clip-on and also a night vision clip-on for the thermal. Being able to spot a coyote or pig long range would be helpful. For the thermal, this would not be to shoot, but more for spotting. The night vision would be for shooting with a rifle barrel shotgun or a rifle. Also, guys, it helps if you get in parameters like mid-price point, because what's mid-price point to me may not be mid-price point to you. And long range, what do you mean by that? When I think long range, I think outside, like past 500 yards. Maybe thinking past 50 yards, that's a huge disparity there. So, that said, the best things I can come up with in even a mid-price for thermals, they're not going to give you anything approaching long range. And for mid-price, most things, I'm going to tell you, you're probably better off at this point with night vision than thermals. I don't think it's going to be that way forever. Much like the world of home PCs, you know, there was a dramatic drop in price on those when the technology improved and got better and more affordable. It's been going on a lot longer with night vision than with thermals. Nice thermals are really nice. They're also really expensive. And trying to tell the difference between a coyote and a fox, which may not be legal to take in your area with fish and game laws, or a neighbor's dog with budget thermals is not something I'm going to advise you to do. Here is what I'm going to recommend. My number one pick, the AMPVS-14. The PVS-14, I would consider mid-priced. It's been around a while, They retail for about $2,500, $2,600. They're not the latest and greatest, but they are very well proven. We had these in the Marines. They are effective and they are robust. I know you didn't ask about this, but I know other people are listening. If you're looking at all to do anything kind of hard use, this is better. And I've listened to Jack long enough to know about his garden hose analogy. I think this is that best value garden hose, not the one that's going to bust on you in a year. Maybe not the garden hose you're going to pass down to your great-grandchildren, but it's a good, decent garden hose for the money. And this one is a lot more modular. It's not a one-trick pony like some of the other ones where you just it's just a gun sight. Because the AMPVS-14 has military use, you can get a head mount for it, and you can walk around. That's one of my most useful things for night vision is navigation. And if you trip and fall, which you're likely to do if you're hunting or out navigating at night, it's very likely, this thing's probably not going to break on you. And you can clip it onto a rifle with many night vision compatible sights. The classic one being an EOTech. It has a night vision setting. Many other ones do too. You can mount it on your rifle. You can also use it just independently without the rifle as a decent, robust night vision monocular. I think the detail of contrast and ruggedness of that is going to be better than a budget thermal. There's a lot of cheaper Chinese thermals and night vision that I'm not going to recommend here. One notable exception to that, if the AMPVS-14 is a little outside of your price range, HoloSun. HoloSun, I'm not going to lie to you, like a HoloSun optic is not a Trigicon, not an aimpoint. It's okay-ish, but it's far better than most things in its price point. HoloSun makes a night vision and a thermal optic. The night vision is going to be about $1,000 retail when I saw it, just under $1,000, and the thermal $1,500, $1,600. Now, I am not recommending these for a fighting rifle. I'm not recommending these for any kind of hard use, but you mentioned, you know, hunting hogs and coyotes. If you're going to be sitting out in the back 40 waiting for it to get dark, you're not walking around at night beating this thing into stuff. HoloSun, although Chinese, and I would much rather recommend an American brand in this price point, but HoloSun, they've kind of earned a reputation in the Chinese optic world as being a decent Chinese optic. They're going to be far more affordable. I've said this before on TSB. I got a similar question a while back. I'm going to say it again. Whether you get night vision or thermals on your weapon system, have a good high lumen white light. The amount of money you're going to drop on one of these systems pales in comparison to a good high lumen white light. You can identify the target with your thermals, with your night vision, verify it with your white light, and probably just take the shot with your white light. It's the more sure system, so you don't shoot your neighbor's dog. That's, I don't know, an Australian heeler that under thermals may look very much like a coyote. Or again, a fox, which, depending on fishing game laws, may not be legal for you to take in that manner, in that time. Scale can be harder to judge on a 2D screen, like a night vision or thermal setting. So whatever system you have a good white light mounted on there. Get positive ID of the target before you engage it. Here's another thing I'm going to tell you, too. The amount of money we're talking here, even for the cheap Chinese ones, you can get a really, really good rifle, even nowadays on the market, a really good AR for a fraction of what those things are going to cost. You may consider getting a decent purpose-built varmint predator rifle. 223, 243 is one of my favorite crossovers. You talk about coyotes and hogs. 243 is great for that. 308, and just have that. You get it zeroed, and that's your nighttime hunting rifle, and it gives you the excuse to buy another rifle, and you just have it and set it aside, white light, night vision, or thermals. Not that you couldn't use that rifle during the day, but it's just easier just to have a good purpose-built hunting scope for daytime. So quick recap, the HoloSun, thermal, and night vision, really there's nothing else I think in that price point, in that class, it even comes close. My number one recommendation is going to be the PVS-14s. You're going to get a lot more use out of those. They're a lot more multifunctional from driving at night if you want to try that out, not on a government road. walking around, nabbing at night, seeing wildlife at night, which can be super fun. Any kind of perimeter type stuff, to a fighting rifle, to a hunting rifle, the PVS-14, I think is going to be your better investment. Remember to get a positive ID of the target. Thanks, TSP, and have a blessed day.
Great stuff, and this is really great gear, and it's tech gear. And so one thing to always remember with tech gear, even if it's gun tech gear, tech always goes down in price over time. The latest and greatest from 5 years ago is cheap today. The latest and greatest from today will be cheap in 5 years. And so if you don't have an immediate need, you may want to put a tech-based purchase off a bit until the lower end of the market is a higher quality. I want you to just think about what you can buy in a personal computer today for about $500 to $1,000 versus what you could have bought for $2,000 20 years ago. Or a television set, right? Like, I remember when if you had a 50-inch screen television, you were a baller. And now those can be had for under $500 at Costco or Walmart any day. So just something there. Now, the misidentification thing is something that's real no matter how good your gear is, and it has to be really, really, really considered. I'll tell you a very quick story, and we'll go to the next segment that we have for you. I had a fox problem for a while, and I have a very good friend that has some night vision gear. It's not a scope, it's more a monocular. And I went out every night looking for this fox, because this fox was a problem. And I look over my fence into my west pasture, down into this dry pond, and sitting on a rock at the edge of the dry pond is what looks like the fox. The distance, though, it was uncertain, I wasn't sure. I got closer to be sure it was the fox, and I did not get a shot because I moved too close before I took the shot. The reason I didn't take the shot is not being sure. I didn't know if it was my animal or somebody else's animal, and given I have a cat named Fox because he's nice and orange like a fox and he likes to hang out down there, I realized I could have been shooting not just the neighbor's animal, but my own animal. I would say if you have a larger piece of land where you're less worried about your neighbors, animals, and all, one thing you may really want to do, though, is to put some sort of something on your animal's collar, like a blinker or something, maybe even only visible with the type of imagery you're using, that would clearly to you identify that's one of your own animals. Because a coyote and, you know, a dog like we're fixing to talk about, like a Siberian Husky, in the dark with thermal gear? Yeah, I mean, they look a lot. So it's one of my biggest concerns about using that kind of gear for things like predator control. So just, I'm glad he brought it up. But it's definitely very, very cool gear. One of community members, J.R. Haley, has an awesome thermal scope. It is crazy how well you can see with them. But I think it's a, you know, $3,000 or $4,000 piece of kit. Anyway, moving on, let's talk about what I just said, huskies. I want you to sit. I know a little bit about this. We have a half husky right now, and I had a purebred husky for basically his whole life. I adopted him when he was about a year old, and he had a nice long life. His name was Lakota. I loved him, but man, I understand the question here. Joel, what do we do with strong-willed animals?
Hello, everyone. This is Joel with Fortress Canine and Canine Academy coming back at you again for the expert council questions. And today's question comes from Bob in Tampa, and he's asking about training a husky. So huskies in general are considered pretty stubborn dogs. They have a high energy temperament like a Malinois or a Dutch Shepherd, but they can also be pretty stubborn, kind of like a hound or a terrier type of breed, right? They're kind of a cross between those two mixes. And it can be a little challenging to work with a dog that's like that. So he's having specific problems with his husky bolting out of the house, wanting to run after and chase small animals and hunt them and kill them. And so this is a fairly common issue that people will experience if they haven't done some high level of obedience with their dog. So here's the things that we do that will help with that kind of stuff. Number one is we consider everything that we do with our dogs to be under obedience. So if you have a dog that's having problem behaviors, one of the main problems is probably that you're giving them way too much freedom. And so you need to get more strict with your obedience and your discipline. And when a dog understands that if you say, you know, to do something or that you say not to do something, and it does it, or it doesn't do what it's supposed to do, right? Then they will stop doing it if they understand there's a correction. If there's no correction or no consequence, then they pretty much just blow you off when you say to do something or you say not to do something, right? So in the Fortress Canine and Canine Academy training model, what we do is we combine consistency. That means I'm going to keep doing this thing until you do the thing the way you're supposed to. We have correction, right, which is a physical correction that causes a little bit of discomfort. And then we have praise, or some kind of reward, right? We typically use praise. Some people use treats. Some people use toys. Those things can work for certain breeds. But you need all three of those things. You need to be consistent with what you're doing. You need to have some kind of a consequence when they don't do what they're supposed to do. And you need to have some kind of reward for when they do what they're supposed to do. And then you take those things and you start implementing them into your other training that you're doing. Now, sometimes your dogs will have a specific thing that they do that you really don't like, right? For instance, in this case, running out the door and going and hunting little animals down. So you can do a couple of things when that happens. One is you can set the situation up to occur and then be ready to deal with it the second it does. This could be something like we've used this technique in the past, getting a long line, so say a 30-foot piece of rope or a 30-foot long lead that we use in dog training, putting a correction collar on a dog, such as a prong collar, clipping the long line into it, either holding it tightly, depending on how big your dog is, or tethering it to something really heavy and really solid, right? Because they're going to have 30 feet of run time to get going on this. And then open that door and let them go, except for they've only got 30 feet. And when they hit the end of that line, they're going to flip over backwards. They're going to go, "Bleh!" And they're going to be very uncomfortable. And then I just go, "What happened? Come on back in." And they're like, "Holy crap, that's never happened to me before." And I act almost like nothing, because in that situation, what I want is I don't want them to directly associate it with me. Right? Now, you have to be careful because they'll figure out, hey, you're putting that thing on my collar right before I run out the door, and that's the thing that's doing it. You can also do a similar process with an e-collar, right? You kind of want them to understand what an e-collar is, though, before you just start using it if you've never used an e-collar with your dog before. But here's what I've experienced. 99% of people's problems go away if they do obedience with their dogs. And by obedience, I don't mean, well, occasionally he sits when I say sit. I mean, you say sit and they put their butt on the ground every time, right? And that's what Canine Academy was built for. Since we sell Malinois, Dutch Shepherds, and German Shepherd puppies, we wanted there to be a course that would actually teach people how to train those types of dogs if they're getting a puppy so that they don't end up in shelters, right? Because that's why most of those dogs end up in shelters, is because they're a high-energy dog, and if you don't have good control over them, they end up going to a shelter. So if you put the obedience into your dogs, and when people came to my courses that we would do, like, weekly training classes on Saturdays or whatever, 99% of them came because there was a problem, and 99% of those problems went away as soon as they started doing obedience with their dogs. And the few problems that did continue were because they were not doing what I recommended when they were at home. They were not keeping their dog under control. They were not keeping their dog under discipline. That doesn't mean that they always have to be doing something specific. It means whatever you're doing, if I say to do a thing, you do it. Right? You could be running around in the yard and I go, "Let's go. You better come." If you don't come, the lead goes back on. We go back into discipline mode until when I say come, you come. When I say leave it, you leave it. When I say plutz to lay down, you plutz. I could let my dog roam, but the second I give them a command, they better do it. And if they don't, we're back into discipline mode. And it sounds like a lot more work than it is. If you remember your ABTs, always be training, then everything that you do with your dog becomes an obedience exercise of some kind or another. And you can have your dog laying next to you while you're watching TV in the evenings and giving him pets on the head, and that could be an obedience exercise. Because when I touch you, I want you to stay in that position. I want you to stay in a plutz, or I want you to lay up here on the couch beside me, but not crawl into my lap, right? I'm going to teach you couch etiquette tonight. Everything that you do becomes, I want my dog doing what I want them to do, and that is obedience. So I hope that's been helpful for you. If you guys need more help with your dog training needs, check out canineacademy.us. I recommend you go over to Jack's website, thesurvivalpodcast.com. Click on his banner there so that he gets credit for this. And I like to keep Jack happy with the credits that are coming in. And if you are looking for a working line German Shepherd, Dutch Shepherd, or Malinois puppy, or a trained protection dog, check out fortresscanine.com. Until next time, remember to train hard and stay safe.
So just a couple real quick reinforcements here. Everything Joel said works. It's really with huskies and dogs like that, it's more about you have to be better about being consistent. The dog is, maybe we'd say it's a little less error resistant. So when you get certain breeds like a golden retriever, right? And or a German Shepherd, honestly, especially a non-working line German Shepherd, like a family German Shepherd that's not super energetic and bred to be a little bit smaller and faster, more agile, just a normal German Shepherd. These animals have such a desire to please their human that if you are a little bit faulty, it's pretty easy to like, okay, we let the discipline lax, just let's bring it back up and the dog comes back around. My pit bull mix, Charlie, was like that. There was an episode, a time here that we were doing some airsoft shooting and he started snapping at the guns and I'm like right in front of him, like, let's do a little remedial training. So we put the e-collar on him and then I didn't even put the e-collar on. I just started holding my phone up like it was the control for the e-collar and he's like, oh yeah, I know what I'm supposed to do, right? That dog was very much, I want Jack to be happy with me. Huskies are more like, I want to be happy. And when you fail to instill the discipline, the dog's like, oh, I can get away with this. And even when you start instilling the discipline, it takes a lot longer for that dog to stop checking because they don't forget. Their memory is, the husky's memory is insane how good it is. And they will literally remember exactly how I got away with it last time and try it. And if it doesn't work, they'll modify the behavior. And once they understand something like how to get out of a fence, you have to completely retool things to where that method will never work again. Ask me how I know. I picked up my dog 2 miles away from my house, completely covered in muddy, looked like an elephant shit him out, because he figured out when it rained, that was the time to dig under the fence, because you only needed a little hole and you could use the mud like lube and spooge yourself through. Okay? That's how smart they are. So you have to not only do what Joel says, it's always a good idea to always be consistent, but when you deal with a strong-willed animal that's smart, then it is imperative that you never back off the discipline, right? And discipline, you heard how Joel said it, it doesn't mean being mean. You're like, well, what happened? Well, come on, get them back over here. Like, you don't have to yell to use discipline. All right, let's now talk about using AI, which I'll be talking about in a bit, but doing it if you don't want to be tracked with what you did and where you're going and where you went next. How do we do that? Well, Ryan, the homestead consultant, will tell us.
Hey TSP community, this is Ryan Steva with thehomesteadconsultant.com, and today I wanted to talk with you about AI. Now, you might wonder why a homestead consultant would want to talk about AI. And the reality is AI is an incredibly powerful tool. But for myself and many of my clients, one of the big things that is a concern is privacy. Most AIs, like ChatGPT, require a login and personal information, and they track what you're doing, they track your conversations, and most people are pretty turned off by that, and I agree and understand why. So the other issue with AI is that oftentimes you get biased information or have censored information that the AI won't give you. So I have a way around both of those objections, and I'm going to talk you through that. So the basic way to do this is you're going to install the Brave browser on your computer. And so once you have the Brave browser installed on your laptop or desktop, and you've opened it up, on the top right corner of the Brave browser, you're going to have three lines in a little box. Open a new private window with Tor. You're going to click on that one. So new private window with Tor. And when you click on that, it's going to open a new window with the Tor system. Once your browser loads Tor, because it takes a minute to connect, you're going to be presented with the Brave browser search page. And from that page, I can search anything and then use AI to generate answers if I want to. So here's an example. Who is Jack Spearco? And what it's going to do is give me typical search results where I have links I can click on, but it's also going to bring up an answer. And I've actually tried this several times and I've gotten slightly different answers each time. Now, the really cool thing about this system is you're actually able to ask follow-up questions about the thing that you already searched for. It also is less biased and has a lot more uncensored information than most other AIs. So if I were to search how to break into a car, this system will actually give me an answer of how to break into a car. So I've just done that. I've pulled up, it looks like, about 7 different ways to break into a car. Then I can actually take the options that it gave me and further drill down to ask about those given options under the ask a follow-up question. So that's how I'm using AI without leaving a trace. Of course, don't do anything illegal or dumb with it, but you can do so much more with this system without being tracked, traced, controlled, or manipulated. So I've been really happy with this so far. I hope that helps some of you out. If any of that didn't make sense to you, I am going to include a video link for my YouTube channel to a video that I've done on this topic. It's basically just this segment with a video overlay so you can see what I'm doing. If you have any questions for me about creative homestead solutions or about home maintenance and home issues, I'm actually also a licensed home inspector in the state of Tennessee. So get those questions over to Jack if you want to get in touch with me. You can look me up on thehomesteadconsultant.com or clarityhomeinspection.com.
You know, I like the end there because whenever we talk about privacy, people start thinking, oh, that means I cannot pay taxes or some other thing. Like, there is a total case for privacy that has nothing to do with, you know, disobeying the law or trying to get away with something. It is simply that maybe I don't need somebody knowing my business, and maybe knowing my business could, you know, somebody knowing my business could harm me in the future. So I think privacy is something we all need to do a better job with. And it's especially true of those of you in my audience who are, like, I'm going to say under 35. And many that are a little bit older than that, too, but definitely under 35. You've never known a world where people really valued privacy. You really haven't. And I think that is why the younger folks are more subjected to having their data compromised, everything that they do known. And they're out. You guys are also, I'm going to say, you really young guys, you're posting some dumb shit that's going to come back and bite you in the future. You have no idea what job or opportunity it might cost you. And a lot of us in, like, Gen X and the boomers, we tell you guys, like, hey, you're all stupid. Look at what you're doing. The reality is, if smartphones had existed in the 1980s, Gen X would be considered the most retarded generation on the planet for some of the dumb shit that we did. Because we actually did dumber shit than most kids today because we had autonomy. We could get away with it. So we're fortunate that there's no documentation, or that we at least control the documentation of our own stupidity. I have some very interesting pictures in one of my photo albums, things that weren't that bad, just so I could have conversations with my son and my grandkids as they got older and remember that I was an idiot too, so I'm not too hard on them. But there's plenty of shit that I'm glad there's no evidence of. I'm just saying. All right, moving on. Let's hear from Patrick Rohrman about knife handle material.
Hey guys, this is Patrick with MT Knives coming to you today with today's Expert Council segment of the week. Today we're going to talk about handle material selection, different types of handle material, and what to consider when you pick out a handle material for knives. There's lots of different materials that are used for handles of knives, and especially, you know, people try to experiment with all sorts of things. I remember one year I was at the Blade Show. They've got so many different vendors there selling different handle materials. It was kind of funny because this one vendor had this material out, and he says, I bet you can't guess what that is. And I was looking at it, and I kind of knew right away. It was a corn husk. They had taken corn husk and did it inside like a resin. It was funny because he just assumed I wouldn't know what it was because most people who have never, you know, grown up on a farm or seen corn husk wouldn't have a clue what it was. The different types of handle materials. You've got exotic type handle materials. You've got composites. You've got natural bone, carbon fiber, G10. Supernaturals, which would be stuff like shells or corals, tusk. And then some people use stone. And then, of course, your different types of woods. You could use very basic wood, very common wood, or you could use some exotic woods from all over the world. When selecting the proper handle material, some things to take into consideration are, you know, longevity of the material, how easy it is to work with, what type of PPE you may need. For those who don't know, PPE is personal protective equipment, safety glasses, respirators, long sleeve shirt, you know, dust collection. A lot of these materials that people use today are not real good to breathe the dust from, stuff like carbon fiber or G10. You want to be careful breathing in the dust from these materials. When I choose a handle material, I'm looking for something that is going to last a long time, that is, you know, proven, reliable, something that looks good, and something that feels good, and is nice to work with. So I've used G10 and carbon fiber, bone. I've used all different types of handle materials, and there's some that I just prefer not working with. If I have to be careful of the dust that I breathe in from the material, especially the older I get, in different lines of work that I've had, we've had to learn about asbestos. You know, when I was younger, I'm just kind of like, eh, you know, who cares? But something like asbestos is really crazy because the fibers of asbestos can stay suspended in the air for like an incredibly long time. And so if you get it in the air, it's going to stay there. And then when you breathe it in, you never know, but it could be 20 years later when you start having problems from that. So I'm sure that a lot of these materials are the same way. You might breathe them in and be fine, but how are you going to be 20 years from now? So I would like to encourage you, if you're going to work with some of these materials, make sure that you know the hazards and take the right precautions to protect yourself. So I like working with a lot of natural wood. I like ironwood is one of my favorite woods to work with. It's getting harder to get a hold of. But one thing I like about ironwood is the density of it. It's super hard. You're not going to have problems with moisture. You're not going to have problems with, different materials are going to expand and contract differently. Some woods have a lot of oil in the wood itself, and so your epoxies and stuff don't like to stick to it. There's a lot to know about how to not only just select handle material, but how to work with it, how to, you know, apply a finish if you're going to apply a finish to it, how to polish it. I like to work with ironwood, kingwood, a lot of natural woods, a little bit with some synthetics like G10 or stuff like that. But anytime you start getting into some of the wild new stuff that they have, it may look really nice, but what is it going to look like in 10 years, 20 years from now? Some of these epoxy type resins, they're going to tend to yellow with age. Some of these materials are just going to fall apart. When you're selecting wood handle material, like wood handle for materials, something else we haven't talked about is stabilization. So some woods, like ironwood, are naturally kind of rot resistant. They're not going to have a problem with expanding, contraction, taking up moisture and stuff like that. However, some wood does have a problem with that, and something you can do to help combat that is to have it stabilized. Now, a lot of people stabilize stuff at home, but you're just not going to get the same quality of stabilization as if you send it off to some place like Knife and Gun Finishing Supply. So I've sent quite a bit of material to them to have stabilized. And you want to take into consideration, if you're building a knife, you're making something that's going to be an heirloom, you want to think about how is it going to hold up to 20 years of hard work, 40 years, 50 years. So all these things are things that I take into consideration when selecting materials for knives. And if you have any other questions about materials, feel free to shoot them to me, patrick@mtknives.net. I'm doing more and more machining, too, on knives. And so when you talk about like machining material, there's some handle material that works really good to be machined and others that not so well. So, anyways, this is a pretty in-depth subject that I could go on and on about the nuances of handle material and stuff like that. Talking more about PPE, it's good to have some sort of dust collection in your shop if you're creating a lot of dust. And one other hazard that comes along with dust collection is there is an explosion hazard with dust, some dust. Be sure that you understand the dangers of the materials you're working with. Be safe. Thank you for your question. This is Patrick Rohrman with MT Knives. If you guys have a question you'd like answered, feel free to send it to me, patrick@mtknives.net.
All right, great stuff from Patrick. Let's go ahead and hear from Ben Falk on tapping maple trees. This question actually came in with the standpoint of, how do I do it when I've never done it before? And Ben comes on, like, here's how to do it. But I think that the person that asked the question may have inferred at least a little bit that, like, is there something you have to do differently because this tree's never been tapped before? And there isn't. It's the same whether it's the first time or the 400th time that you tap a tree, and exactly what you do. And one thing I'll add here, and then because I'm just going to drop you into my segment at the end, Ben talks about evaporating it and turning it into actual syrup. And I'll just say that we had two huge maples in the backyard of my grandparents' house, and nobody was really interested in making maple syrup out of it. It was only two trees. And so I used to tap it every year and just drink the sap like water. And it was like this mildly sweet maple background. It would have kind of been akin to like take real maple syrup and dissolve like an ounce of it into probably like 20 ounces of water. And it was really good. And I don't have access to that anymore. But if I did, I might, like, I don't know, get 5 gallons of that and make a beer or a mead with the maple sap versus the evaporated syrup. Just a thought. And Ben can tell you how to actually do this.
Hey, Jack and all. Ben Falk with Whole System Design. The question about tapping just a few trees in your yard in Minnesota. They're silver maples. Yeah, silver maples, you can definitely make sugar out of. Their sap has sugar content. It's just lower usually than sugar maples, Acer Saccharum. But if the crown is really big, the sugar content can be pretty reasonable and, like, I think push like 2% or 1%, which is actually pretty decent, even though it doesn't sound like a lot. That's actually a bit of sugar. So yeah, you want to basically check out the Proctor Maple Research Center from University of Vermont. They have good guidelines. You don't want to over tap a tree. There's a certain number of taps per diameter size of the tree. Generally not more than 3 ever. I wouldn't do more than 2, even if it's a really big tree, but sometimes people go kind of crazy. Obviously, the tree needs the sap, so you don't want to overdo it. But yeah, you tap the trees, you know, in February, March, and when the sap's flowing, you'll collect a lot of sap, and then you just have to boil it like 40 to 1. You have to boil off like 40 times the water at least, depending. So the easiest way to do that at home is just like a catering pan, like a big stainless casserole pan over a fire outside. Don't do it in a pot or it'll take forever. You need a wide, you know, something that evaporates quickly. Inside, you'll create a ton of moisture, and that's a pain in the butt. So I would just do it outside over a fire. I think it's hard to make it worth it, but it's a fun project. I mean, just for the sugar, the syrup alone, you know, it will be a lot of work. And you'll think, wow, $50 a gallon of maple syrup actually isn't that much money, really, given how much fuel goes into it. But with kids and stuff, it can be a fun project. And, yeah, you'll need a whole bunch of wood, and you do need a maple syrup hydrometer. You need to know exactly the density when it hits. It's like 221 degrees, something. There's an exact temperature and density when it's sugar, when it's syrup. And if you go beyond it, it's going to crystallize and become maple candy. And if you don't get quite there, and I'm talking like right there, I think 66% sugar, it won't store. So you have to hit it just right. you tend to need tools to do that well, unless you're very experienced with like looking at it coming off a spoon when it's hot. And you have to be there when that's happening, or you'll just ruin the whole pan and create like maple candy over the whole pan and be trying to clean that off for like a year, or burn it. So yeah, then you can can it directly at pouring it right through a filter cloth, like a natural filter cloth, or not, and ending up with the minerals at the bottom is fine, right into sterilized jars. And you can actually just sterile can it right away. And that's a great way to go. So yeah, pretty straightforward, but there's a lot of resources online. Those are kind of the cliff notes to it. Yeah, good luck. Have fun.
Okay, next up will be my segment from the live stream. The audio will come from the live stream that I did on Rumble, and I get pretty animated in this, and it was a live, so I'm trying to be somewhat entertaining at the same time. But this is a very serious subject, and it's about this new announcement that we're going to have these AI-driven, right? So you got Larry Ellison and other people saying they're going to use AI to find markers in your blood, and then use mRNA technology to treat cancers. But there's a lot of people who I generally, on the macro, agree with. Like, I don't think this is necessarily a good thing, but the way they're explaining it is absolutely asinine, and it's not grounded in reality, and you'll hear in my segment here how that can actually be very detrimental when you are a voice of opposition to have your fellow opposers saying dumb things about it that are easily disproven. Hi guys and gals, today's live stream is only on Rumble and a couple other places that either I won't get banned from, or I like Facebook, I can tick a button and live stream there, and I don't care if Facebook bans me or puts me in Facebook jail or whatever. I don't really give a shit, but I reach a ton of people on YouTube, and I'd say there's about 100% chance that if I did this video on YouTube, if it gets any traction anyway and shared around at all, which I hope it does, that YouTube will throw me in YouTube prison. I believe the next time I go to YouTube prison, it's a 30-day stint, and that's a long time to be disrupted in reaching a lot of people. So I'm going to do this one primarily on Rumble. You guys that are on Rumble watching it while it's live, I can see you if you comment, and maybe I'll take a question or three during this, but this is not going to be a long live stream. This is going to be no hour, 2 hour, whole episode. This is just a segment for the show. So what I wanted to talk to you about today, and I've been planning all week to do this segment today, but I originally didn't plan to do it, is a live stream. I was just going to do it like my expert counsel shows are usually audio only. They go out on the podcast streams. But I started seeing so much stupid being tossed around about this very important issue on social media, I thought it was necessary to make sure there was a way to share this so that you can. So there are some people, because I've said, it's not what you're saying it is. They're special children. They're a little bit special in certain ways. And they think that means that I'm pro this thing, which I am absolutely not. I'm also a realist, though, and there may be some good to come from it. Who knows? We don't know yet. Here's what we do know, and we absolutely know these things. We know we cannot trust the people doing it. We shouldn't trust anybody. Every person out there should know, never trust, only verify, right? And that includes the words I'm telling you today. I say that all the time. You never trust me. I guess you can have some trust, but if it's anything that you're like, I'm not sure, go check it out. I never mind being questioned about a claim, and whenever I'm presented with information contrary to the claim, I investigate it. If I'm wrong, I come back on the air and say, hey, I got this one wrong. Everybody's fallible. Everybody can make a mistake. One of my biggest reasons I don't trust anybody in the establishment is because they speak in absolutes in the first place. When somebody speaks in absolutes about something that cannot yet be known, you know you can't trust them, because they're either liars, con artists, or they're stupid, right? I mean, to believe that you can know an unknown and state it as though it's a known is the hallmark of either dishonesty, stupidity, or willful ignorance, and I'm not a big on that. I think there's going to be a lot of discussion about this issue, and I think you're going to run into a lot of people who think it's the greatest thing in the world. We're going to have cancer cured because Orange Man says so by August or something, right? And that's not going to happen. No matter what good might come from this, maybe, possibly, in some offshoot, is a lot longer of a way out than they say. However, there is something to it, because whenever they say they're going to do a thing and they state it definitively – there's already a framework for it to be done. An example would be if you go all the way back, just a little historically speaking here, totally unrelated, Barack Obama and Mitt Romney debating, and Mitt Romney kept saying, North American energy independence, we're going to achieve. Well, we already knew that was going to happen. And so whenever you have a politician, a bureaucrat, et cetera, stating something that we're going to do definitively, they're either lying in some instances, or if you look into it, you're like, well, that's like saying it's going to rain tomorrow when all the radar indication is that it's going to rain tomorrow. Like you somehow divined it out of your Nostradamus crap. So let's talk about what this is and what this is. And I'll start out, what is mRNA and what was it developed to do in the first place? Because a lot of people don't know. First of all, it's not a vaccine. I have links in the video notes here, and there'll be a link in the audio notes to get over to this video, and you can get all these other additional links. But when Moderna filed with the SEC to go public, they stated in their SEC filing, which you do not lie in unless you want to go to prison, okay? This is a federal offense, and it's a documented federal offense, and no lawyer is going to let you do it. If it happens, it's going to be an error. And this is not an error. If you go to page 19 of Moderna's filing with the SEC for their company to go public, they define mRNA technology as a genetic therapy. That's what it says. You can read it yourself. I'm not going to overdo it. So it's a genetic therapy. And a lot of people worked on it over the years, and some were pretty vocal during COVIDs about the fact that it was being used in a way that it was never intended to be used. And that's the truth. mRNA technology was never intended to be used for max vaccination, i.e. we have a flu, a cold, a COVID, a whatever virus, and we'll use mRNA to develop a vaccine to vaccinate the masses. And that was one of the alarm bells some of the co-creators of the technology rang, and no one wanted to listen to, and everybody was censored for during COVID. I try to be very clear about what I'm speaking in fact an opinion. Right now I'm telling you this is a fact. This is a fact that is documented. You can look it up. You can find it. This is not my opinion. The technology was not meant to be used for mass vaccinations. It was never its intent. What its intent was is exactly what they say they're going to do with it now. This does not mean I'm saying you can trust them. I'm telling you the intent of the developed technology. It was to be developed individually because something that is based on your genetics needs to be tuned to you because your genetics and Bill's genetics are different. So that's what the intent of the technology was. And again, anybody out there saying, Jack says this is good, with where I am right now, you haven't listened or you are not capable of understanding the English language. I've clarified it over and over again. I don't know what else I can tell you to help you under fucking stand, okay? Now, let's move on to where AI sits in this. So right now, if you go give like ChatGPT or any of these AI agents problems that involve math, and especially if you don't say, I want you to take these numbers and do this problem, and even sometimes when you do that, they get it wrong. The AI makes more math errors probably than just about any other error, unless you can attribute it to some of the bias built into these systems. So, certain things you ask it to do, that'll violate our policy or whatever. Or, no, they'll write a poem that says good things about a Democrat but not a Republican. Shit like that, right? We know that's in there. But it also just makes fundamental errors. The technology is not where it needs to be to do anything like these people are talking about today. However, where AI really shines is when it is built specifically to do one thing. And many of us are experimenting with that on our own, and we're building our own AI tools. And I've used this example before. You could get something as weird and niche as like a group of herpetologists get together and train their AI unit on everything that is known about reptiles and amphibians, because that's what herpetology is. And it would be really good at that because it only does that one thing. It's very inexpensive and fast to train the tool on that. And if you went and asked that AI that was built for that purpose about French literature, it'd say, I don't know, or it would hallucinate, depending on, you know, the base code of it and how well you managed it. But you understand that that is niche training. And it's very, very good at niche training. It's very fast, very, very lightweight, very affordable to train. You could train a model for a few hundred dollars instead of millions of dollars. So is it possible that they could eventually train an AI specifically to look at blood and look for markers and be very specific about what that marker is and what it represents? Yeah, but I don't know that it would be any better or faster than any other existing technology. Okay, so the possibility of this claim that AI will determine the cancer type and the treatment path, and mRNA technology could be used to devise a treatment for that cancer type, is possible, though I don't believe it to be probable. I think this is all a grift. But I just went from what is fact, it's possible, it is possibly a fact, to my opinion, I think it's a grift, and I'll try to make a better case for that as we go on, okay? But there's a big problem in all of this, and that is using the word vaccine to describe this genetic therapy. It is not a vaccine. It has never been a vaccine. Nothing made with mRNA is a vaccine, as you understand the word, or as the word is used in law to protect and indemnify vaccine manufacturers. If you go back to 1986, Ronald Reagan put in protections for vaccine makers under the guise of, it is very important that everybody get these vaccines, and I want you to think about vaccines that existed and didn't exist in 1986 when the law was passed, let alone about 1984 when it was drafted. I was a kid in 1984. I remember going to the doctor. I got a handful of vaccinations as a kid. I didn't like it. I'm not saying you should go do it. I'm just saying it was, you know, smallpox, it was measles, it was stuff like that. We didn't even have a chickenpox vaccine in the mid-1980s. So it was a different set of even vaccines at the time. But what were those vaccines? Those were things that were developed by taking a weakened or dead virus and injecting it in the body and training the body's immunoresponse with the intent of preventing infection. That was the purpose. Before COVID, the CDC changed the definition of vaccine a little bit. And then during COVID, when they decided to take this technology that is designed to tailor make an individual treatment for an individual and use it for mass vaccination as a giant test case on humanity as fucking guinea pigs, they changed it further. Then they bullshitted us and they said, we just changed it to make sure that you don't think that means it's 100% effective, because no vaccine's 100% effective. It's all bullshit. If you go read the two changes, and I have an article linked in the video notes below, you can see what they really changed. And if they wanted to change it to make sure that it wasn't 100% effective, they could have just added a line, no vaccine is 100% effective. They wouldn't have had to change the definition intended to prevent the infection and stop the transmission of disease. Because the COVID thing, whatever it does, which I think it does more harm than good, what we know it doesn't do, it does not prevent transmission, and it does not prevent infection. And it's not that it doesn't always. Like, if you said, well, it's 98% effective, and so for every 100 people injected, 2% can still get it, okay, fine. But that's not the case. It doesn't prevent it at all. It does nothing to prevent infection. Infinity. See why I didn't do this on YouTube. Because no one can prove that it does. Okay, my opinion is that it doesn't. The facts are there is no proof that it does. Okay? Again, fact versus opinion. So my biggest concern for now right here is as follows. Since it's being called a vaccine, accepted as a vaccine by Orange Man and everybody else, and God help us, will RFK please get involved with this at some point, really? It would be able to technically stand under the Vaccine Protection Act of 1986, meaning that if you got it and it killed you, your family wouldn't be able to turn around and say whatever drug company made that particular version thereof, you're responsible for his death. They'd be able to say, oh, it's a vaccination. So that's a huge problem. And I think that is by design. Again, judging the word I just used, think. I don't know that's the design, but I think that's what they decided. Like, and why wouldn't you? You know, people right now are giving shit to some of the people Biden gave pardons to. Well, if you weren't guilty, why'd you accept a pardon? Look, I don't think Biden should have done it. Honest to God, I don't think he should have done it. But if someone said to me right now, hey, the President of the United States, and I don't care if it's fucking Jerome Powell or Dingbat fucking Ding Dong, I don't care who was president, the President of the United States right now wants to issue a preemptive pardon to Jack Spirko so that any crimes committed between January 1, 2014 and today are not prosecutable. I don't think I did anything. I wouldn't say no. How stupid would you be to deny yourself a shield like that? So the fact that this shield exists, calling it a vaccine, it goes under the Protection Act of 1986 by Ronald Reagan, of course they're going to use it. I would use it too. If you're going to do anything with this, this has to change. There has to be some carve out if they're unwilling to change the term vaccine, because it's not a vaccine. It is a therapy. And what that does, and he's saying it's good. I didn't say it's good or bad yet, did I? Did I? I'm just saying that's what it is. Again, I'm back to fact. Whether it's good or bad is opinion. I'm not giving you any more opinion than I have to today because I want you to have your own opinion. I know that's crazy talk, but that's what I do. And those of you that listen a lot, you know that. So here's my other issue with this. You guys know that like one of the most important things to me is developing and never ignoring my own pattern recognition and encouraging you to use pattern recognition in what you do on a daily basis. I've seen this potential, not pattern, but potential pattern before. And I really encourage you to read or get the audio and listen to a book by Robert Kennedy Jr. called The Real Anthony Fauci. It starts out digging mostly into COVID, but it transitions at some point into really looking at what people like Bill Gates and Anthony Fauci have done around the world. And it goes all the way back to the 1980s and the AIDS pandemic or the AIDS epidemic. And what you learn in that book, and again, this is fact. This is so sourced you cannot deny it. If you haven't read the book and you tell me I'm wrong, I'm going to tell you go read the book. And it's a very long, hard book to read, and that's why I kind of recommend the audio on it because it makes it a little easier to get through. But it's incredibly impeccably researched. And it is absolutely a fact that there were people who had no symptoms of HIV, did not have AIDS, because AIDS is when you actually progress into the disease, that were told they had AIDS, that were given these drugs that were developed and backed and pushed through by Fauci for approval, and the drugs killed them. They may have never developed a disease at all. It was the fact that a blood test said this virus is present, and the virus they blame for AIDS, down back to unknown, but evidence shows it may not even be what actually causes the disease. In fact, it would have been the first time in history that science would have identified a retrovirus that causes an illness like this. It'd be the only one. Maybe it is. I don't know, but there's a pattern here. You give a person a blood test, you say they have something, this person has no illness, no disease, no problems, you treat them and then they die, and when they die you say, no treatment is 100% effective. They died later in life. They had a better quality of life because we gave them this treatment. So my concern, and I think it's a legitimate concern here, is that what can happen now is they'll develop this blood test, they can tell you you have a marker for this cancer, we're going to develop this fantastic, you know, therapy for you, we're going to inject it in your body, we're going to charge you or your insurance company a fuckload of money for it, and then we're going to say we saved your life. And two things are going to happen after you do that to a person. Nothing. And they're going to say, we saved your life. Or you're going to get really sick and die, and they're going to say, we tried. And then if you go, well, but you told this person they had cancer of the big toe, and they actually developed cancer of the brainstem and died, and we think your shit did it, they're going to say, well, take it to vaccine court. I think that's very, if everything stays the way it is right now, that pattern feels like the way that this will repeat itself. But this is what I need you to understand, and you have to understand this. This is not being proposed as we're going to develop a vaccine for all cancers and have everybody line up like they're joining the military and give everybody a shot and then say, if you don't get the cancer vaccine, we're back to vaccine passports and all that shit. We already know cancer is not contagious. And it is absolutely possible that treatments for specific cancers can be developed using this technology, because the number one way you can treat cancer is to get the person's immune system to recognize the cancer cells as a problem and attack them. Here's the unknown. How the fuck are you going to do that with a vaccine? If there actually is a way to use this technology to manipulate the immune system to understanding to attack this thing, then that needs to be explored. Not rubber stamped, not, hey, we got $3 trillion and Larry Ellison's going to save us and cure cancer. This is stupid thinking. This is Orange Man being Orange Man. This is Orange Man overselling everything, and everything he does is fucking glorious, and gold falls out of his ass when he shits. That's what this is right now. But it is worth investigating the concept. My question, and I'd love to have someone that is deeply familiar with the technology come on the air and talk to me about it in a real discussion. I don't ever attack my guests, even when I disagree with them. Those that have listened a long time know that. How are you going to do that when supposedly the body already has this thing inside it? How can showing it more of it make it attack it? And how can that be done without triggering an over-immune response that actually gives the person a form of an autoimmune disease? That's one of many questions I have about this bullshit. But in the end, there really isn't any promise of anything right now other than a whole bunch of money developing a whole bunch of AI. And I know some of you are really worried about some of the comments made by Ellison about how it will surveil people and make them be good boys and girls. That is totally relevant. That is totally a problem, and they can totally shove that up their fucking ass. Okay? But it's a separate discussion. And that's what they always do with this shit, guys. They always confuse you by throwing out two things something's going to do, and then you conflate them, and then this is what they'll do if you don't learn the type of things that I was giving you today. They will take the people that are the most radical. Do not comply with something no one's asking you to comply with, right? No mass cancer vaccinations. They'll take those people and they will amplify them. And I'm not saying those people are in on it, okay? I'm saying more that they believe their own bullshit, but they'll always they'll try to silence everybody, but then they'll amplify the most ridiculous fucking retards there are out there. You've seen it done. Remember when the white coat doctors came out to speak about the effectiveness of hydroxychloroquine along with zinc used on COVID patients? Remember that? Okay, these were a group of extremely competent, non-lunatic doctors. Somehow there was one fucking crazy bitch in that group. The black Jamaican chick that you've never heard from again since it happened. Okay? You got all these very esteemed doctors. Who gets the 60 Minutes interview the next day? Dr. Crazy Bitch. What does Dr. Crazy Bitch say? Oh, I would have Fauci rolling on the ground and pulling demons out of him. And all the good work those people did were just shit on and instantly destroyed. And nobody, even our friends and family in our own personal circle, would listen to anything after that about hydroxychloroquine, including people who had been open to it up to that point. Why do you think that happened? Why do you think that happened? I'm not even saying they took Dr. Crazy Nigerian Bitch and stuck her in that group. I'm saying they went, oh, look, crazy. Let's give crazy a platform. That's what's done all the fucking time. All the time, right? And I've got, I think it's my special friend over here that I was communicating with today in a comment. He says, Trump loves his vax daddy. See, as long as you're making this personal, as long as you're like, oh, see, I told you so, nobody will listen to you. Nobody that's got any fucking brains anyway. Unless they share your particular hatred of a particular thing or person, they won't listen to you. And then if they do, then the two of you will get together and grab each other's asses and jerk each other off, okay, and be complete lunatics, and maybe one day you'll be the one that gets amplified, right? And then you destroy all the resistance you think you're part of. I am encouraging you today to get as informed as possible about anything that you're going to talk about before you talk about it. And anybody that thinks that means I'm a shill for the establishment or our special friend over here who thinks that, you know, basic bitch right-wing talking points. Anybody who's listened to my show for, like, any length of time, but especially the 16 and a half years I've been doing this, knows that person knows nothing about what they speak. They don't understand a thing about what they're saying. Right wing Jack Spirico? Boy, that makes a lot of fucking sense, doesn't it, for the people in the video? Yeah, right wing. That's the most right wing symbol on the planet back there, isn't it? This is nonsense. What I am is pro-truth. And this is the reality that we're dealing with right now. We have oligarchs that cannot be trusted developing extremely advanced technology with what they're calling AI. And it is not artificial intelligence, because it's not intelligent. It's programmed language models is what it is. It is not sentient. It is actually, artificial intelligence is a bad term because of what people think that means. But it's actually a really good term if you understand what it means. It means fake intelligence. That's what artificial means, not real intelligence. So it's not real intelligence. It's a language model that interprets data and spits it out in a conversational form. And it's actually a very powerful tool, and many of us are using it, but we understand what it is, we understand its limitations, and we understand that it cannot be trusted. It has to be used for what it's useful for. So, what do you do? What should you do about the fact that this is going on at all right now? Number one, not much you can do. There's nothing for you to do. You are not going to hold their feet to the fire. Some other stupid shit people are going to make up. You're not going to do anything at all from a standpoint of preventing it from going forward from where it is. There's too much momentum on it. It's going to happen. It's actually two emerging technologies. Emerging technologies emerge. They usually end up with something good coming from them, and they usually do a lot of harm as they emerge. Follow the pattern of history. Number two, if you discuss it, please do it from an informed angle, not from a reactionary one. In other words, know the things I told you today and learn more. I can only fit so much into about 25 minutes, which is what I want to limit myself to. See to your own health, no matter what treatments you choose or trust. You're the first line of your own defense for your own health. Living the right way, eating the right food, exercise, all of the things we teach, stay away from all these chemically processed foods, stay away from high fructose corn syrup, stay away from seed oils, eat the freshest, cleanest food you can, build your diet based on protein, fat, from animals and vegetables. That's what your diet should be based on. And if you want to eat other things, do it. But that should be the core of what you're doing. And think for yourself. Question everybody, even me. If you disagree with anything I said today, go look it up. And if you can prove to me with evidence, not your opinion, not your shrieking, not that you're outraged, not that you're offended, not something like that. Here is facts that prove what you claimed is not true. Send it to me, I'll look at it, and you'll hear me on this show come back, maybe on a full episode instead of a segment, and say, guess what, guys, Jack was wrong. Here's what I said, here's the correction to it. I always do that. I don't do it a lot because I generally get informed before I open my fucking mouth, something a lot of people would do well to emulate. Anyway, this is available on Rumble if you want to share just this. I know some of you be like, Jack, if you said fuck less, I'd say it more, share it more. I don't care. Then find somebody else, because there's other people saying this. I'm not going to censor myself so you feel better about sharing it with some church mouse. I don't care. This is what I do, and I do it my way. And I encourage you, if you would like it done a different way, do it for yourself. I'll even promote you. I've done that. I went out and made a podcast that's different than yours because I don't like the way you do X, Y, Z. Hey, great, guys, if you want to listen to somebody that censors himself, go listen to this guy over here. Seriously. Not facetiously. Like, yeah, if you don't like the F word, fine. Now, how great was it yesterday when we had Molly on and she probably said fuck more than me? That was awesome. Anyway, guys, that will do it for this video segment, and I will have a Friday flashback for those of you that check out the podcast tomorrow, and we'll do it all again starting next week. And if you would like to share that segment, if you dare, with anybody else, you can do so. Again, it is on Rumble, not YouTube. And I think we can all agree that that would have sent me right to YouTube prison, and that wouldn't be good. I think I get a 30-day stint next time, and then I'm going to go with the YouTube death penalty after that. So I don't want to push things any further than I have to, but it's available if you want to. Anyway, with that, let's go ahead and wrap up. Let me remind you that on Saturday this week, we have a composting class, a little bit of biochar stuff mixed in with it here at my location. It's $50. I'm going to leave registration open until tomorrow morning when I'm going to shut it down. I really said the end of the day. But here's why, and I hope that anybody that's in this situation listens today. I've gotten two people contacting me, and I'm not really sure what's going on. I haven't checked my email while I was recording today, so who knows if I've heard back from any of them. But they've told me that they registered for the class, but they haven't received any additional information. Except when I go to look to see if they registered for the class, they didn't. But I do find them in a folder that I had for people that wanted to be notified when it became available to register. I'm thinking that these people told me they wanted to come, and they think that's registering. It's not. You had to pay for a ticket. It's $50. And so I've asked both of them for payment information, and I don't know if they've sent it yet. But if that's you, if you like emailed me back when I first talked about it and said, hey, I want to come, let me know when I can, and you never registered when we released it and promoted it for like the past 3 weeks, you're not registered. And there's only a couple tickets left. So if you want to come, you need to register for this, and there'll be a link in the show notes today for this. And if you're listening to this like Friday afternoon, forget it. It's already shut off, and it may have be sold out at that point. But I just wanted to say that. But it's going to be a cool class. It's going to be fun. We're going to have sausage. We're going to have roast pork shoulder. The weather's going to be beautiful. And then I've got another event coming up in March, toward the end of March, with Crunchy Mama Farms. I'll talk about that a lot more next week once we get through my little event, because this is going to be a big event processing cows. With that, hope you enjoyed today's show. I will catch you tomorrow with the flashback, and next week we'll do it all again. Run you round. They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay.